Good morning. Welcome to the MRMC podcast, coming live from Mount Royal Mennonite Church. My name is Trevor. This morning, our guest is a man I'm sure you probably all know, at least by his reputation. His name is Matthew. He is a writer, an evangelist, a follower of one whom we know as Jesus. Welcome, Matthew. Let's begin by hearing a little bit of your story. What you were doing before you met Jesus?
Well, Trevor, I grew up in Galilee. I don't know if you've been there, but it's a long way from Saskatoon. I was always ambitious. I was pretty good at math when I was in school, so I decided to become a chartered accountant. By the time I was 25, I had landed a really lucrative contract with the Roman government to collect taxes from my fellow Jewish people. It paid very well. And I collected a lot of money both above and under the table.
Yes, Matthew, I've heard about your profession and about the commissions that you've earned. I would imagine that you weren't so popular with your fellow Jews, were you?
No, I wasn't.
So, tell us, how was it that you came to meet this Jesus?
Well, I was sitting at my collection table one morning when Jesus walked by. Now, I had heard a bit about him, but I didn't really know anything about his teaching or anything else. Imagine my surprise when he walked up to my table and said, "Come, follow me." No introduction or anything, just "come, follow me." Now, I am not a spontaneous type of guy, Trevor, but to my surprise, I got up and followed him.
So tell us about some of the other guys that also joined Jesus.
Well, that discipleship crew was rather a motley crew. Most of them were fishermen. Nate was a bit of a philosopher. Judas was a money man like me. And they were suspicious of me. They didn't like tax collectors, and I think they thought Jesus was being a little too inclusive by bringing me into the group.
Wow, now that is quite the story of your beginning. But hey, what happened with your silk robe?
Well, when in Saskatoon, do as the Saskatonians do, right? I had to check out the thrift store and get some clothes other than robes so I could appear on your show this morning. But clothes really aren't that important anyway.
Okay. So later in your career as a follower of Jesus, you turned to writing. And you spent a lot of time with that book on the bestseller list. So congratulations. That's incredible. I have been reading your book lately, Matthew, and I'd have to say that it's pretty good. This morning, I would like to read a passage from it and get you to comment on it. Would
sure.
that be okay?
Sure.
Okay. Jesus told another story. God's kingdom is like a farmer who planted seed in the field. That night, while his hired men were asleep, his enemy sowed thistles all through the wheat and slipped away before the dawn. When the first green shoots appeared, and the grain began to form, the thistles showed up as well. The farmhands came to the farmer and said, "Master, that was clean seed you planted, wasn't it? Where did these thistles come from?" He answered, "Some enemy did this." The farmhands asked, "Should we weed out the thistles?" He said, "No. If you weed the thistles, you'll pull up the wheat. Let them grow together until harvest time. Then I will instruct the harvesters to pull up the thistles, tie them in bundles for the fire. Then gather the wheat and put it in the barn." Wow. That is some difficult story to understand.
Tell me about it. You know, most of our gang were fishermen, and the teacher himself had been a carpenter, not a farmer among us, so those farming stories were a bit strange to us, Trevor. Rocky, whom you might know as Peter, he hammered away at that story until he had a major headache trying to understand it. And Andy tried and nearly busted a vein trying to figure it out. And Nate, well, After wrestling with it, he uttered some Hebrew words I'd best not repeat here.
Wow. That sounds painful. So, tell me, Matthew, do you understand it now?
Well, later that evening, after the teacher had told that story, we were invited over to one of his friend's house for a fish fry. And around the fire, we asked the teacher to explain this story. And this is what he told us. It's in my book, chapter 13. The farmer who sows the pure seed is the Son of Man. That's the teacher. The field is the world. The pure seed are subjects of the kingdom. The thistles are subjects of the devil, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, the curtain of history. The harvest hands are angels. The picture of thistles pulled up and burned is a scene from the final act. The Son of Man will send his angels, weed out the thistles from his kingdom, pitch them in the trash, and be done with them. They're going to complain to high heaven, but nobody is going to listen. At the same time, ripe, holy lives will mature and adorn the kingdom of their Father. And then the teacher added these words, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen."
Well, that's certainly an interesting story, but to tell you, Matthew, it's not helping me much understand this.
Well, Trevor, you know the parables aren't easy to understand. They're stories, but the endings are not always clear. I think they're supposed to resist easy answers, but here's an initial thought. The teacher is saying that good and evil grow together in our world, and it's not always easy to separate them. The right from the wrong, the innocence from the iniquity. In my world, in your world, that's a difficult task.
Okay, so that's basically why we like to watch TV shows like CSI, Spider-Man. They're basically uncomplicated stories. The good and bad guys are pretty obvious as we're watching these shows. You see evil, blast away at it, watch it drop. End of story.
Maybe we didn't get those shows back in Galilee, but back to my story. Real life isn't quite that simple, as simple as these shows that you're describing. You see, in my day, there was a plant called darnel, or it's called thistles in your translation. Darnel, and in its early stages, it looked a lot like wheat. Its roots were sturdy, and they'd get entangled with the roots of the wheat. And until it headed out, you couldn't actually tell it was a weed.
Okay, sounds like the problems we have here in Saskatchewan with wild oats. Hmm. So Jesus did know a little bit about farming. But it seems to me that your explanation is trying to change the focus of the parable. It seems to me that Jesus' original story focuses on the need for patience. Wait for the final harvest, which will be God's work, not ours. But you disciples call it the parable of the weeds. Why not say the parable of the harvest or the parable of the wheat?
Well, Trevor, here I'm embarrassed to admit it, but we disciples majored in weeds. In fact, in the school of discipleship, we were honor students when it came to weeds. You see, the teacher gathered all these, what we thought were shady people around him to be his followers. And we expected him to do some serious weeding of his followers.
Okay, but isn't it important to root out the weeds, the evil around us? It seems to me that some of Jesus' followers were pretty concerned about a pure church and about evil.
Well, we have to be careful here. The teacher says the field where the sowing took place, is the world. In other words, not the church. Now, the teacher did tell us about purity and holiness in the church and accountability, but that's another chapter, chapter 18. You can read about it there. But in this story, the teacher is speaking about evil in the world. And it was confusing. It is confusing. I can share another story. One day we were going to Jerusalem, and we went through this. We decided to take a shortcut through Samaria, a province that had people that we didn't much like and they didn't much like us. But we were tired and exhausted, and we wanted some food and drink and a rest. But the villagers met us at the outskirts of the village, and they said, "No way, you cannot come in here. You are not welcome. Not even a cup of cold water to share." Well, we were all upset, but James and Johnny, they were furious. Lord, they roared, do you want us to call down a bolt of lightning and incinerate these Samaritans? Well, the teacher gave them a pretty good dressing down for their anger and for their self-righteousness. By the way, that's a story found in my friend Luke's book, chapter 9.
So isn't it true that there's a mixture of good and evil all around us? Here in our families, our congregations, our neighbors, even our politics.
Well, that's one of the reasons the teacher counsels patience. And we should rely on God's wisdom rather than our own judgments.
Granted, there is a mixture of good and bad in all of us. What about the larger evils? Isn't resisting evil important?
Yes, it is important and necessary. But we need to be careful about what we name as evil and how we resist that evil, not use the same methods that the world uses. For example, violence. You know, there were a lot of people in our day, and I hear there are some of these folks in your day as well, who think that judgment and purity are the only work of the church. In my day, there was a small group of people called the Essenes, and you may have heard of them. They lived down by the Red Sea, or the Dead Sea, rather, and they thought they were the only pure Jews in all of Israel. They hated the Romans. They didn't like other Jews who didn't live the religiously pure lives that they thought they should. And they thought the Jerusalem priests were hopelessly corrupt. And so they separated themselves and moved to a commune down by the Dead Sea to stay pure. They judged everyone and found them wanting. The Essenes wanted a political and a military Messiah who would cleanse the world of all the weeds, once and for all. Well, the teacher could have done that. Maybe he was tempted to think about joining the Essenes at one time, but he didn't. Did you hear the end of the story that you read earlier? Final judgment is up to God alone. You see, the teacher, unlike those others, kept his circle open. And he didn't promote titles. He never actually built a church building or set up any kind of organization. I've been watching the church for the last 20 centuries, and you've done a lot of good things. But maybe you've forgotten this part of the teacher's message about keeping the circle open and being careful about titles and position and prominence.
Okay, Matthew. So majoring in weeds can lead us astray. But the question remains, how do we as disciples of Jesus live in the world in the face of evil?
Well, I can offer a couple of things, Trevor. First, we obviously live in a world where we'll face opposition. You face your own challenges just as we did. The teacher himself learned firsthand that if you live a life for the kingdom in the world, you'll face opposition. And the Roman authorities disliked that so much, they crucified him on the town dump outside of Jerusalem. But second, we need to be careful, as I said earlier, how we confront evil. Yes, it's important to name that which is unjust, but the way that we deal with it is also very important. We can't use the world's methods, especially methods of violence and condemnation, to deal with evil. We name it for what it is and then live our own faithful lives. And third, remember that when I wrote the book, we lived in the shadow of the Roman Empire. You have your own empires in your day. Empires sometimes make life difficult for Christians. We faced persecution, economic discrimination, sometimes just simple misunderstanding. And some days we felt the future was pretty bleak. I understand that you're facing some real challenges in your time here in Saskatchewan and indeed in the world. And sometimes the future looks kind of grim. But the teacher's words are intended to encourage us. The story he told said God is in control and the future belongs to God. It's God's kingdom that will finally triumph. No empire, whether Roman or any other empire, will endure forever. Only God's kingdom.
Okay, that's hopeful. Evil exists, but the future belongs to God.
That's right. So we can relax. Saving the world is not up to you and to me. The teacher knew that God alone is Lord of the harvest, and God is wise enough to separate the weeds from the wheat, good from evil, in the final day.
Okay, sort of like God doesn't judge a person until after they're dead. So why should we?
Yeah. You know, the teacher could always see people's motives and what drove them, whether their fears or their passions. For example, the teacher saw into the hearts of Herod and Pilate and the high priests their arrogance and their cruelty and their fear. He saw that for what it was, and he named it. He also saw a person like me, a corrupt tax man, who was capable of being one of his followers and invited me to do so. He saw in Rocky, whom you know as Peter, a mixture of cowardice and of courage. And he saw in people like that street woman that my friend Luke writes about. Her heart was filled with love, and she opened her heart to his forgiveness and the joy that he was offering. So God still sees us for who we are, but God also loves us too much to let us stay the way we are.
Okay, so part of what you're saying is that we need to be patient. We can trust God for the future. Is that right?
Couldn't have put it better myself. And let's not forget about the positive message in the story. There will be a harvest. You see, lost in all this talk about the weeds and even about evil is, the teacher says, the wheat will produce a harvest. The seed's been planted by God, and God will provide all that's needed for its growth. Let anyone with ears to hear listen.
Thank you, Matthew, for being here today. This has been interesting and it's been helpful. Would you be willing to come back next week to share a few more stories that I'd like to discuss with you?
Sure, I'd be happy to come back. Coming back next week, next Sunday, gives me a week to sort of visit some of the Mennonite Church Saskatchewan churches and see how they are living out their lives of discipleship here. Galilee, after all, is a long way from Saskatchewan.
Thank you. And again, this is Trevor signing off from our podcast here at Mount Royal Mennonite Church. Thank you.